How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
Welcome to Cruise News, your daily update on everything happening at sea. Visit cruisenews.io to see today's stories and sign up for email alerts. So today, we're really looking at a day of, well, massive cruise curveballs.
Yeah, curveballs is definitely the right word for it. It's been wild.
Right. I mean, we're talking about everything from major regional shutdowns to, you know, everyday port delays, and then ending with this bold new way to cruise long term.
Which is fascinating because this whole industry relies on this incredibly intense choreography, right? Like everything is timed down to the minute.
Exactly. And today we're looking at what actually happens to you when that rhythm completely breaks down. We'll explore this mundane port delay that just cascades, a huge geopolitical shutdown, and finally a structural shift toward long-term residential cruising.
Yeah, it really shows how fragile the whole system can be when you push it.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the everyday stuff. Something that seems totally mundane, but just exposes that fragility. A foggy morning in Jacksonville, Florida.
Right, and, you know, it sounds minor to a lot of people. Like, oh, it's just some fog.
Just a little mist.
Exactly. But weather is literally the ultimate stress test for this industry. You can spend, I mean, billions of dollars on state-of-the-art logistics, automated terminals, precision scheduling.
But the weather doesn't care.
It doesn't. The moment the atmosphere drops visibility to zero on a turnaround day, all of that expensive infrastructure basically hits a brick wall.
And we saw exactly how that brick wall functions on March 2nd, 2026.
Yeah.
This was in Jacksonville.
Yep, the Carnival Elation.
Right, Carnival Elation. So looking at the Port Authority logs and the passenger updates from that morning, the ship was just returning from a four-night Bahamas cruise.
And we should note, no mechanical issues whatsoever.
None. I mean, it's a 70,367 gross ton fantasy-class vessel.
Yeah.
Built back in 1998, but
it literally just came out of a fresh dry dock in Freeport.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
January 2026.
Yeah.
Propulsion, navigation, engines, everything was totally flawless. But then this incredibly dense blanket of fog just parks itself right over North Florida.
Mm.
And it completely halted the ship's approach. We're talking a full three-hour delay arriving at the home port.
And look, 3 hours might sound to you like, I don't know, a long lunch break.
Right. And you just grab a coffee and wait.
Yeah. But in maritime operations, a three-hour delay on a turnaround day is just a structural disaster.
How so?
Well, you have to look at the physics of the bottleneck here. Dense sea fog is this recurring, totally systemic vulnerability for Southeast and Gulf Coast ports in the winter.
Oh, like Tampa, Mobile, Galveston.
Exactly. New Orleans, Jacksonville. In these cooler months, you get these rapidly fluctuating air temperatures interacting with warmer ocean currents.
Oh,
and it creates this thick thermal inversion, like pea soup fog. Visibility drops to near absolute zero. And harbor pilots, they simply cannot safely guide a 70,000-ton steel vessel through these really narrow shipping channels using just instruments.
Because if they can't see the markers, it's game over.
Exactly. The Coast Guard or the Port Authority will just shut the channel down. So the ship is forced to drop anchor out in the open ocean, literally burning fuel, while the clock is just ticking.
Which instantly ruins the plans of the thousands of people waiting to board. I actually saw a Facebook post from a guest who said they'd already been driving for like 2 hours toward the port when the delay notice finally hit their phone.
Oh, man. That's the worst.
Right. They just had to pull off the highway, find a diner, and just sit there. Because this delay didn't just trap the passengers on board who were trying to disembark. It totally blew up the embarkation schedule for the next cruise.
The five-night sailing, right.
Yeah, heading out for Sea Day, then Celebration Key, and Nassau.
Well, and the logistics of a turnaround day are so incredibly rigid. I mean, the terminal is designed as a high-speed throughput engine. It is not a storage facility.
Definitely not.
So when a ship is 3 hours late, you've got Union longshoremen standing idle, right, on the clock, waiting to load provisions.
Just burning money.
Exactly. You have customs and border protection officers waiting to clear the returning passengers. All those labor costs are piling up while the ship is just sitting at anchor.
I always think of this scenario like a buffer overflow in a computer system. Mm. Once the memory is full, every single subsequent process just crashes.
That's a great way to put it.
Or, you know, in physical terms, think of it like a massive parking garage in a really crowded city. You simply cannot open the gates and let 2,000 new cars into the structure until the 2,000 old cars have backed out, paid, and driven away.
Right. There physically isn't floor space.
Exactly. Yeah. You have over 2,000 passengers trying to drag their luggage through customs, find their shuttles, locate their cars. Carnival couldn't just, like, pile the next wave of vacationers into that exact same building.
No, they couldn't. And that structural limitation forced Carnival to take a really hard line with the incoming guests.
Yeah, they did. They wiped out the morning embarkation windows entirely.
Yep. The 10 a.m. arrival slot got pushed all the way back to 1 p.m. And they established this strict, totally non-negotiable terminal deadline of 5 p.m.
And they had to be pretty firm about it, right?
Oh, yeah. They explicitly warned incoming guests that if they showed up ahead of their revised time slot, they would be turned away at the door, period.
Wow. Which, you know, it completely changes the psychology of the passenger for that trip.
100%. Instead of this seamless, relaxing transition into a vacation, you're starting your trip frustrated. You're managing luggage in a parking lot, dealing with aggressive crowd control.
And it hits the cruise line's bottom line immediately, too. Because that five-night itinerary starts with a sea day, Carnival noted they actually had some flexibility to increase their cruising speed to make up the lost time before reaching Celebration Key.
Right, but there's a huge catch there.
The fuel.
Exactly. Pushing those engines to higher knots burns exponentially more fuel.
Plus, while the ship is delayed in port, the casino is legally required to stay closed. The duty-free shops are shuttered.
Yep. So they are burning extra fuel and losing out on hours of prime onboard revenue.
It's just a textbook example of how a localized, temporary atmospheric condition can cost a cruise line tens of thousands of dollars and instantly sour the customer experience.
Absolutely. But, you know, as disruptive as a closed shipping channel is, eventually the ship docks, the fog lifts, and the system resets.
Right. Which brings us to a scenario where the system does not reset.
Yeah, this is where things get really intense.
Because when you look at how vulnerable a traditional cruise is to a temporary weather delay, it really puts things into perspective when an entire regional grid just crashes. We're looking at the Arabian Gulf right now.
Right.
TY Cruises has been forced to cancel multiple departures for two of their major ships, Mindshift 4 and Mindshift 5.
And Mindshift 4 was docked in Abu Dhabi while Mindshift 5 was stationed over in Doha.
Exactly. And the cancellations are rolling deep into the season. We're talking March 23rd for Mindshift 4 and March 12th for Mindshift 5.
This really elevates our discussion from, you know, an operational inconvenience to high-stakes global gridlock.
Yeah, definitely.
The security environment in the Middle East degraded with staggering speed. And we are looking at the maritime and logistical fallout here, just strictly the operational reality of having commercial vessels in a suddenly hostile zone.
And the catalyst for this specific shutdown happened on the afternoon of March 1st, 2026. According to the security briefings, there was a severe incident right near Port Zayed in Abu Dhabi.
Right where Mindshift 4 was actively docked.
Yes. Two missile-armed drones struck a nearby naval base warehouse.
Just terrifying for anyone there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And this wasn't some distant rumor for the passengers. There were loud explosions. Shipping containers caught fire. Heavy black smoke was billowing into the sky. You could clearly see it from the upper decks of the cruise ship.
But the response from the crew was immediate and honestly textbook.
Yeah, they didn't mess around.
Not at all. I mean, Mindshift 4 is a nearly 100,000 gross ton vessel carrying about 2,500 guests. They immediately initiated emergency protocols. They moved everyone away from the outer decks and the windows and literally sheltered the passengers in the interior theater.
Wow. And thankfully, the vessel was completely undamaged. Zero injuries reported among the guests or crew.
which is incredible. And actually, passenger reports highlighted how methodically the crew handled it. They were keeping families and young kids calm while this whole situation on shore was unfolding.
Wait, I have to stop you there, because you might be wondering if things are getting tense. Why don't these massive ships just pull up the anchor and sail to safer waters? Like, why stay docked in a region actively experiencing military strife?
I know, it is the most intuitive question to ask. If the neighborhood is bad, just drive away.
Right, exactly. You're on a boat.
But what's fascinating here is how geopolitical geography just completely overrides maritime capability. To get out of the Arabian Gulf and reach the safety of the open ocean, any vessel must pass through the Strait of Hormuz. And that specific strait is a severe geographic choke point. Because of the conflict, it was effectively closed to civilian vessels.
So they were trapped.
Completely boxed in. Commercial ships could not leave. And furthermore, the moment an area is designated as a high-risk war zone, maritime insurance premiums absolutely skyrocket.
I can't even imagine the kind.
It's astronomical. And it can actually void coverage entirely if a civilian captain intentionally navigates into restricted waters without a military escort. So they could not legally or safely navigate the only exit route by sea.
So you have thousands of people trapped on a ship that literally cannot sail, which means the only way out is by air.
Exactly. And that exposes the absolute deepest structural dependency of the modern cruise industry.
Right.
A cruise ship is not a self-sustaining transportation loop. It is entirely dependent on global aviation. You cannot execute a turnaround day, or in this case, a mass evacuation, without a fully functioning international airport nearby.
And the airports were collapsing alongside the seaports. We saw sweeping airspace closures, reports of damaged infrastructure at major hubs, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Doha.
Yeah, the major regional carriers, airlines like Emirates and Qatar Airways, they had to largely suspend their operations.
So TUI Cruises is just sitting there with over 5,000 guests across these two ships who desperately needed to go home to Europe, and the commercial flight network they relied on just evaporated.
The logistics of a mass repatriation under these conditions, it's mind-bending. You can't just drop 5,000 worried tourists at a damaged airport and wish them luck.
Right. Here's your bag. See ya.
Exactly. TUI Cruises had to orchestrate this massive, staged, multinational extraction. They were coordinating directly with the German Federal Foreign Office, international embassies, private security consultants.
And they had to secure charter flights, which were highly coveted at that moment.
Highly coveted and incredibly scarce. And for the few commercial flights that were still authorized to operate, like certain Qatar Airways routes, TUI had to negotiate specific seat allocations. They were just buying up blocks of inventory.
I read they even had to establish land bridges. They were transferring guests from Abu Dhabi over to Dubai by bus, just to position them for the few available departure windows.
Yeah, moving people through a conflict zone by bus. Just incredibly stressful.
And they set up a dedicated family hotline running 10 hours a day just to manage the panic from relatives back home.
Understandably so.
And TUI wasn't alone in this nightmare either. MSC Eurybia was stuck docked in Dubai facing the exact same logistical wall.
Right. And Celestial Cruises had to completely suspend operations for their ships, the journey, and the Discovery. They were scrambling to execute their own evacuation plans. It really forces a profound reckoning for itinerary planners. For years, the industry has pushed seasonal deployments into these regions.
Because they offer lucrative winter sun, wealthy port cities. It makes sense on paper.
It does, but when the airspace and the sea lanes close simultaneously, the product instantly stops being a luxury vacation and transforms into a highly complex multi-million dollar repatriation mission.
Yeah. The ships kept the people safe, but the supporting infrastructure proved incredibly fragile.
Very fragile.
And, you know, when you see how vulnerable a traditional corporate cruise is to a closed strait or a closed airport or even just a foggy morning in Florida, It really makes you wonder why anyone would subject themselves to a corporate itinerary at all.
Which perfectly explains the explosive demand we're seeing in our final story.
Exactly. Some people are looking at these operational headaches and deciding to just throw out the short-term schedule entirely.
Right. We are witnessing a rapid, rapid acceleration in the residential live aboard market.
So cool.
Yeah. The concept of converting ships into permanent float and real estate is not new, but the scale and the financial backing we are seeing right now, it represents a significant shift in maritime asset management.
Let's look at the deal Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings, or NCLH, just put together. They are chartering out one of the older ships in their Regent Seven Seas fleet.
The Seven Seas Navigator.
Yes, built back in 1999. and they are chartering it to a residential startup called Avora Residences. They're going to completely transform this vessel into the Avora Lumina for a January 2028 launch out of Lisbon.
And they aren't going on a standard 7-day Caribbean loop.
No, it is beginning a continuous 3-year global circumnavigation.
The financial structure of this agreement is incredibly revealing, too. It's structured as a 9-year charter that actually includes a purchase option.
Yikes.
NCLH stated they expect to complete the transaction by the first quarter of 2026, though the ship will continue sailing its scheduled Regent itineraries until the end of 2027.
Before entering dry dock for that massive residential refit. But wait, I'm honestly a little confused by the underlying logic here. Well, if NCLH is this massive publicly traded corporation, and they know this 1999 vessel is aging out of their ultra-luxury Regent fleet, why don't they just sell it outright on the secondhand market?
Right.
Or scrap it. Why go through the headache of a complex 9-year charter agreement to turn it into condos?
It's a great question, because scrapping a luxury vessel yields absolute pennies on the dollar. You're mostly just getting the salvage value of the steel.
Okay.
And the secondhand market for small, older luxury tonnage, it's completely saturated right now.
Makes sense.
Plus, NCLH is currently executing a massive fleet renewal strategy. They are bringing in state-of-the-art, highly efficient prestige-class ships for the Regent brand starting in December 2026.
With even more scheduled for 2030, 2033, and 2036.
Exactly. So the Seven Seas Navigator is their oldest and smallest ship. It's sitting at about 28,800 gross tons, operating a 1999 vessel right alongside brand new billion-dollar builds.
Hmm.
It dilutes the brand.
And it hurts their fuel efficiency metrics, I imagine.
Big time. So by chartering it to Avora, NCLH secures a steady stream of revenue from an aging asset. They offload the operational risk, and they basically buy themselves time until the ultimate purchase option is exercised.
That is a brilliant disposal strategy. NCLH gets a profitable off-ramp, and Avora gets a ship with a proven luxury pedigree without having to, you know, raise $1 billion to build a hull from scratch.
Exactly.
And what Avora is selling is just wild. To put this in perspective for you, it is the difference between booking a high-end hotel room for a week versus buying a luxury floating condo.
Right.
They are reducing the cabin count to create 242 private residences.
Mm.
And these units range from about 300 square feet all the way up to over 1,100 square feet.
And the pricing definitely reflects that exclusivity. For what they call a life of ship ownership, you are paying anywhere from $545,000 up to $4.2 million.
Wow.
And if you don't want to commit to the entire lifespan of the vessel, they do offer a 5-year option that starts around $219,600.
But, I mean, haven't we seen this exact promise fall apart before?
Mm-hmm.
I specifically remember a company called Crescent Seas trying to do a residential conversion with this exact same ship back in 2025, and it completely collapsed.
Oh, yeah. Total failure.
Right. They realized that gutting a traditional cruise layout to build highly customized residential spaces requires just a staggering amount of capital expenditure. The plumbing, the electrical grids. None of it is designed to be easily moved.
You are spot on. Crescent Seas failed because they tried to reinvent the ship's entire internal architecture. They just hit a massive wall of structural realities and skyrocketing conversion costs.
So why is Avora confident they won't meet the exact same fate?
Well, the CEO of Avora, Kathy Velleba, explicitly stated their strategy is evolution, not disruption.
Okay.
So instead of tearing the ship down to the steel studs, Avora is retaining the established systems, the existing operational standards, and crucially, the established vendor and service relationships.
Ah, so they're keeping the ship's bones intact.
Yeah.
And the founder, Michael Pedersen, emphasized that they are redesigning public areas to support daily routines rather than just, like, vacation lounging.
Right, because it's a lifestyle, not a trip.
Yeah, they are adding dedicated business hubs and global connectivity centers. Because you aren't just drinking margaritas for 7 days. You are running your business, paying taxes, and living your normal life while the ship moves around the world.
Which fundamentally alters the pacing of the journey. Unlike traditional cruising, where the ship, you know, rushes into a port at 8 a.m. and blasts the horn to recall everyone by 4 p.m. to save on docking fees.
Right.
The Avora Lumina is designed to stay in port for up to 5 days at a time. It allows for actual immersion rather than a frantic shore excursion.
And here's the detail that completely blew my mind. After that initial 3-year circumnavigation, the route becomes resident-driven.
Yes. I love this part.
The people who bought the condos actually vote on where the ship sails next. I mean, if you think arguing with your neighbors at a standard homeowners association meeting about lawn care is bad, imagine the absolute nightmare of an HOA meeting at sea.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Arguing with your neighbors about whether you were spending January freezing in the North Atlantic or sunbathing in the Mediterranean.
It is a hilarious image, but it really highlights a profound operational shift. The traditional top-down corporate itinerary is completely replaced by community consensus.
Yeah.
It is the ultimate escape from those rigid zero-margin schedules we discussed at the top of the hour.
It really is. A bold new way to think about maritime real estate. You have people willing to drop millions of dollars to just live out on the ocean, moving from continent to continent, totally removed from the seven-day hustle.
It absolutely is an escape. But, you know, it brings us to a really fascinating contradiction to end on.
What is that?
As this residential cruising market grows, how will these floating neighborhoods handle the exact same operational curveballs we discussed earlier today?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right. When your passengers are not just ticket holders, but multi-million dollar homeowners who act as a voting block on the itinerary, how does the ship's captain navigate a sudden 3-day fog delay in a tricky port?
Or more severely, how do you handle geopolitical rerouting when your passengers are essentially your board of directors?
Exactly. Managing a traditional corporate cruise line through an airspace closure is already a logistical nightmare. Navigating those same treacherous waters when the person complaining about the delay literally owns the room they are standing in.
Man.
That is going to be an incredibly complex dynamic to watch unfold.
It really is. A totally different kind of pressure when the customer is also the landlord. Thanks for listening to Cruise News. Visit cruisenews.io to catch up on the latest updates and sign up for free email alerts.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.